Welcome to the New York Times Primal Scream Line, where the floor is yours to yell, laugh, cry, or vent for a solid minute.
I just wanted to say...
Honestly, that could have been me screaming, or one of the many hundreds of parents who've contacted us here at The Takeaway over the past several months to share their stories. You see, the pandemic is just too hard on working parents, especially working mothers. I mean, it's so hard that the New York Times set up a hotline to give parents an outlet to vent. And it's the centerpiece of a series called The Primal Scream. Here's some more of what moms who called into the Times hotline had to say.
I cannot remember the last time I did not worry. I did not spend my day worrying about so much stuff. Every day is something different. I just want to wake up and go through my day and not worry and not wonder and not know what the future holds, because this right here sucks and I'm sick of it. I'm so sick.
I'm gonna lose my mind if something doesn't happen soon.
There is just so much talking all the time, all day long, words, all I hear all the live long day is mom.
Well, we hear you, moms, and some dads, and we know that you need help. So today we're going to ask what role employers and the government should have in making this situation at least sustainable. Let's all scream together, shall we? We're going to get to that today on The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Claire Kane Miller is a correspondent for The New York Times covering gender, families, and the future of work. Hey, Claire.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Also with us is Joan C. Williams, the director of the Center for Work-Life Law and a professor at the University of California, Hastings Law. And her center started a free legal advice helpline last April. Joan, welcome to The Takeaway.
Delighted to be here.
Joan, when the calls started coming in, were women, what was the change, if you say, that you started to see during the course of the pandemic?
Well, we've had a sevenfold increase in calls to our hotlines. So the changes were dramatic. I mean, women's whole infrastructure for taking care of children just absolutely disappeared overnight in many cases. And so they were just at wit's end. First, they had nothing. Then they had what's called the Families First Coronavirus Response Act that gave them the right to 12 weeks of leave if they had no childcare or their child's school was closed. But, you know, single moms, they couldn't afford to take the leave. And so they were making really hard choices. And even partnered moms very often couldn't afford to take the leave. But the first wave of calls were for the many, many women who could and did take the leave. But then those leaves disappeared on December 31st. So we are dealing with calls, the same kinds of calls that we've been dealing with all along, women who are pregnant, who are very apprehensive about going back to work because the science around pregnancy and COVID is basically very, very nascent. Women who were working remotely and wanted to continue, but whose employers refused to have them continue. Women who were really worried because there was a fragile person in their household who, if they got COVID, whether it was a child or an elder, were likely to get severe forms of COVID. So they wanted to telework, and sometimes their employers would not let them telework. Now we hear lots of so-called COVID layoffs, which I was just reading one case. The only two people laid off in the entire company were the plaintiff who was pregnant and another woman who was on maternity leave.
We're going to get into some of the specifics here, Joan, on some of the legal issues that those that raises. But I want to bring in Claire here. Claire, you were part of this New York Times project, and you wrote a piece where you mentioned Betsy Stevenson, who's an economist at the University of Michigan. I want to quote what she said. She said, quote, "People talk about how moms can lift a car off their children, but even though you can do it, it doesn't mean you didn't do damage to your body when lifting the car." Really good point. What is the cost to working moms right now, Claire, who are dealing with this, if that's our metaphor?
I think it's a generational hit to, you know, women in the labor force and earning their own incomes. We had just right before the pandemic hit, crossed the 50% line. Women held more than half of non-farm jobs, which is the way they measure it in this country. And now, you know, both men and women's employment has been hurt by this recession, of course. But when you look individually at parents, mothers have been hurt much more than fathers. And of course, it's not just income. It's also mental health, as one of the people on the Screamline said, just, you know, constant anxiety about your kids. It's all of it.
I'm wondering what you're seeing, generally speaking, about caregivers, whether or not they're being penalized by their employers, because that level of stress, and I mean, I've experienced it, a lot of parents are experiencing it, you can't help but having that have an effect on your job. So are women being given, generally speaking, the ability to sort of manage that, or are they afraid that they could lose their jobs?
At the beginning of the pandemic, a lot of employers gave people the ability to shift their hours or work flexibly. And, you know, that was a great response at the beginning. It's not a great response a year in. What it has meant is that people are working nights and weekends. They're waking up before dawn. Maybe that worked last March for a month. It doesn't work for a year. It means they're just doing double the amount of work. For essential workers, maybe they've shifted their schedules around that of their co-parents, so the two parents never see one another. They're like ships in the night. It's really not enough to understand that people need to work at different hours. What needs to be understood is that if you have caregiving responsibilities, it is a complete and total second job that you have going on inside your house, and you can't be expected to do both. And employers, some have said that they will not penalize working parents, that they'll understand. And, you know, it's not just parents here. Everybody's been stressed about COVID. People have gotten sick. People are caring for elder relatives. They've said they'll not penalize them in some cases. In other cases, as Joan mentioned, they already are being penalized. And it's hard to know, as we all know on this call and on this show today, that women were penalized for their additional caregiving responsibilities even in normal times. So it's hard to imagine when it comes time for hiring or reviews that employers won't look at these resume gaps or this decrease in productivity and penalize women in some way.
Joan, the federal government under the Trump administration did issue some protections for parents under the Family First Coronavirus Response Act. That expired on December 31st. That afforded me, for example, the ability to take a couple of days and care for my child. But it is now expired. Who was left out and why, Joan?
Who is left out is basically everybody. I mean, Biden has a proposal that would bring the leave back and actually enhance it. But now mothers, and this is true of fathers too, but really, I call it the great COVID cop-out. Mothers have been left holding the bag in a very, very huge way.
And Joan, what, is that because we as women are expected to hold the bag, or do we as women expect to hold the bag?
It's complicated at some level, and at some level, it's not complicated at all. Men know if they don't do it, women will, and women know if they don't do it, no one will. There's a forthcoming study that shows something really dramatic, which is that when the mom is the only one working remote, surprise, surprise, she does a lot more of the household tasks. But when the dad is the only one working remote, he doesn't do more childcare. So people often say, oh, this is just mother's hormones or mother's priorities or mother's choices. But actually, no, its widely held expectations, really two sets. One is that the ideal worker is someone who is always available for work. And that just means we define the ideal worker as somebody else who has someone who has somebody else, typically a woman, taking care of everything outside of work. That job description is typically not available for women. So we have the ideal worker defined as someone who's always available for work, and the ideal mother is someone who's always available to her children. That's what lands us in this situation again and again and again.
You were starting, Joan, to talk a little bit about Biden's plan, and I would like to hear a little bit about what you think so far. You said it's going to be enhanced. How so?
Okay. The Biden plan would be great. It would bring back the leave. This is the first time in American history we've had national paid family leave. And the first time that I'm aware of that we've had leave for just because you just don't have childcare. So this would bring back the leaves that are available to people whose childcares are closed, whose schools are remote, and it would increase the amount of leave up to 14 weeks of leave. And also, very importantly, as the first set of leaves, the Families First Coronavirus Response Act leaves, the ones that just ended, those excluded 106 million people originally, as interpreted by the Trump administration. And these new leaves, the Biden plan, would not exclude anything like that number of people. So it would be very, very important to get these leaves back for people.
Claire, we've got about 40 seconds left, but I'm curious, does this proposal appear to be on its way to make it through?
It's unclear. The Democrats are working very hard to push it through as quickly as possible. And there is a lot, in fact, of bipartisan support for paid leave. His proposal includes a lot of other things like money for families, like retirement help for women who have had to take career pauses. It's unclear if it will all make it through, but paid leave does seem to have support.
Joan, you wanted to bring up the issue of anxiety that many mothers are experiencing right now. Tell us about that.
Well, mothers should realize that they have quite a lot of legal rights. If your employer is discriminating against you because you're a mom, that's illegal. And people who are extremely anxious also may well have rights under the Americans with Disabilities Act, because that's a disability. So not only can an employer not discriminate against you because you have anxiety, but you're entitled to workplace accommodations if you have anxiety. And those accommodations may include getting leave from your job. This is completely different from the leaves we've been talking about. This is an Americans with Disabilities Act accommodation. And we have been hearing from mothers who, as Claire pointed out, are in a wild state of anxiety. And then many people who had anxiety conditions even before COVID and before this whole mess. And that's one of the contexts in which you have rights to leave.
Claire, one of the things that's come up in this issue, obviously, is childcare. A lot of mothers have decided to leave their jobs to fill the childcare gap, but obviously that's not an option for all mothers. What kinds of policies, Claire, are you seeing that would help fill that childcare gap? One of the things that I've called for in a recent piece in the Washington Post that I wrote was calling for the Biden-Harris administration to create some sort of national childcare system. Is that even a possibility?
It's something that a lot of Democratic policymakers have wanted to see well before COVID. And like so many things, COVID has just laid bare some of the crises that people in the United States are facing. I think one of the important things for people to realize is that the things that would help people in normal times, like paid leave for short periods, aren't necessarily the most important thing right now. For example, when you have a new baby, or maybe when you have a relative who's in hospice, you need a short period of time away from work, you know, relatively short, to care for that person. This has gone on for a year. 12 weeks of paid leave is definitely necessary for a lot of people. I'm not saying it's not necessary, but people need more than 12 weeks. Schools continue to be closed. Child care centers continue to be closed or unavailable, or parents don't feel they're safe. And what can really help there is money. A lot of the women that we've talked to and that we've seen surveyed nationally say they don't actually want to leave work, or they can't leave work. And in that case, what they need is money to find childcare elsewhere. Maybe it's a neighbor, maybe it is going to a daycare or hiring an in-home care provider. People who didn't have nannies before are looking at nannies right now because that would really help. That would decrease the contacts in your family, help with the virus. But of course, many people can't afford that. So, you know, the government plans that would actually just send checks to parents, as well as employers who are finding ways to subsidize childcare. To me, that seems like one of the most effective policies that we could see right now.
And let's talk a little bit about the differences here between how race is factoring into this. And you mentioned, you know, there's also partners, people with partners, single parents. There are low income women. Joan, how do each of these groups fare in this? And what are the different challenges? Because as a single parent myself, I feel like the options are not as available to me to stop working, even if it's for a short amount of time.
Absolutely. And this has reinforced both racial hierarchies and gender hierarchies in a very, very big way. We hear so often from single moms, and I mean, some of them are in the situation where they have to choose between whether to put food on the table and leave really small kids, 6, 8-year-olds, home alone. Those are the kinds of choices that single moms are often facing. And of course, anything that has a differential on differential effect on single moms has a differential effect by race, because 2/3 of Black moms, for example, are single moms. One of the things that we focused on in talking so far about leave is that often people want other accommodations. They don't want leave. For example, I remember reading a case of one single mom, and she just wanted couple of hours a day to supervise the remote schooling, and her employer was refusing to give that. That's one of the things that the Families First leaves gave people, is the ability to take leave in short segments for an hour a day or whatever they wanted. And if the leave comes back, they'll also have that. But there are other reasons why people might be able to have an demand an accommodation for remote work. And we hear all the time from people on our hotlines who have been working remotely effectively, and then their employers order everybody back to work, and they say, you know, do I have any legal rights? And it's a complicated question. If you're in that situation, you should definitely call the hotline, but you may have legal rights if you're being treated more harshly than workers who aren't moms because you're a mom. That is sex discrimination, and you don't have to put up with that. But in terms of the class impacts and the racial impacts, they're really dramatic.
Joan C. Williams is the director of the Center for Work-Life Law and a professor at the University of California Hastings Law. And Claire Kane Miller is a correspondent for The New York Times covering gender, families, and the future of work. Claire and Joan, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. I'm David Remnick, host of The New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.